In this podcast, Tunnel Talk European correspondent Armand van Wyk talks to Dr. Thomas Camus of the Tunnelling and Underground Works Research and Development Programme, NETON, about progress on a range of technological developments that are set to revolutionise mechanised tunnelling and improve safety in the underground environment.
You're the director of the NETON Research Programme.
Exactly. I set up the proposal, and then when we won this grant agreement with the European Commission, all the partners said, well, you led us to the success for the proposal phase, so now just lead us to the success of the actual project. So I'm the scientific and technical manager of the project. I was personally kind of a newcomer in the business of tunneling at that time. I had joined NFM in 2009, in June 2009. So when this call was issued, I knew a limited number of actors in the tunneling business. When I received that call, I had an internal project concerning especially ground prediction. So I started from there and tried to enlarge the possible involvement of other people. So we have a combined system of ground prediction that includes work from three work packages. So we call the system TULIPS. TULIPS is involves then work from WP3, 4 and 5. Three is the radar, electromagnetic radar part. We have involved other labs. We have been through development of antennas in parallel to the development of the hardware and software for the radar. We have finally selected a new design of antennas to fit the TBM to cope with the constraints like the size, the acceptable size that can fit on the cutter head, problems due to the presence of the metallic mass of the cutter head itself. So all this is now complete. We have we are actually building two antennas that will be installed on the Lyon-Turin machine. So we'll have a first limited TULIPS, restricted to the radar part, but this will be running on the Lyon-Turin machine that we are building now at NFM. It will be starting excavations January next year, 2016. So we have physical antennas already ready. We are going to test them next week, actually in the Netherlands, near Eindhoven, before we put all this on the Lyon-Turin TBM. We will have completed the software development, testing, maybe adjustments that would be needed. And the seismic system is, in terms of hardware, is complete now. We have designed a new seismic source with MI partners and a new sensor that includes geophones. The trick is to protect these pieces of equipment when the TBM is actually in the excavation phase. We need to push them out from the TBM when we want to do measurements. So while we are excavating, we have to retract them inside the TBM. And they will be protruding and applied to the excavation front when we do the measurements. We have in parallel developed the software, the automatic data processing or signal processing that will allow us to have some kind of complete focused image of the ground ahead of the excavation front. This is also totally new, at least in the tunneling industry. It will run automatically without any human intervention. We need to have data from the same location and the same, let's say, geotechnical configuration, the data from the seismic system and from the radar system, in order to give that data to the data fusion work package. WP5. They also developed the visualization software, that is the interface to the user. In what form does the user want to see the data?
You also talked about dragbits and lifespan of dragbits.
There's a lot of research on disc cutters. They are expensive items, so a lot of people are interested in understanding better what can be done to reduce the life cycle cost of the disc cutters. Make stronger ones that you change less often, for instance. Maybe each of them is more expensive, but in the end, you spend less money, time changing disc cutters. The same does not really apply to drag bits, so I was kind of surprised, and I thought there is a potential field of research, because you have much cheaper items. Each drag bit is considerably cheaper than a disc cutter, but you have much more drag bits on a TBM cutter head than you have disc cutters. So overall, if you can reduce the life cycle cost of your drag bit exchanges, it's probably quite beneficial for the end user. So we are working with different people. Basically, we have two approaches. One is to improve the quality, durability of the so-called hard metal inserts that are as the teeth in a human mouth. You have, let's say, strong parts, the teeth, and you have a softer part, like the rest of your mouth. So you need both. You need to insert these hard metal pieces into some softer body. Is there a better metal than the hard metal than the one we can find on the market today? And also, what is the optimum shape, and not only shape but the configuration? Where do we need to protect these drag bits so that they last longer? We have the Tallinn Technical University of Tallinn working on hard metals. They've already produced two better metals than the one we use as a reference. So that's a very significant step ahead of the state of the art. And we are working in simulation to understand better the process of wear. What happens, what's the interaction between a drag bit and the ground that it's excavating. Material science is progressing by little steps. It's like cooking. You have a better recipe, but it's basically you have the same ingredients. It's a matter of mixing these ingredients and the process of cooking itself. One of the key steps to progress in this is to have the means to measure the actual wear rate of these new materials. So part of the work went into designing and building new test systems. Judge will of course be building, manufacturing drag bits and installing them on actual TBMs somewhere. So this is also underway. We are preparing this, and we'll find places and projects onto which we can do these tests.
So talk about TBM maintenance. You mentioned also working package in which robots are developed to replace disc cutters.
Currently, if you look at the TBM technology, we can say there are two basic families of TBMs. One is working in open mode. That means it's open to the atmospheric pressure. You can enter the excavation chamber and change the cutter tools without special procedures, let's say. The other segment of the technology are the pressurized TBMs. that are needed, especially in soft grounds. You need to maintain a pressure against the pressure of the excavation front to keep the front stable. That means that you cannot enter the chamber. It's either full of material or full or partly full of compressed air. Therefore, you need to operate in a manner similar to that of divers. Instead of diving under water, they are diving in compressed air, but it's exactly the same. 10 meters of water is an additional bar of pressure. So you need to use specialized people that have a cost. You have procedures, you have a health impact, because they are submitted to cycles of compression and decompression. They have to go through decompression stages as divers do when they come up to the surface. They can only do this by gradual vertical movement. They have to stop at some positions and wait until the blood is back to a normal state. So it's the same here. It has a cost, it presents a lot of risks, and in addition, the work itself is kind of difficult. Disc cutters weigh up to more than 200 kilos, so you handle this without, they are not meant to be handled manually. You need to hook them onto a hoist. It's dangerous. You're at the top of a cutter head that can be 15 meter high. So it's full of risks, and one of the ways of reducing these risks is to make closed cutter heads in which you can enter at normal pressure, and then you have some locks to remove the tools. So it's very complex. It makes a huge cutter head instead of a standard one. It increases the cost dramatically, and we looked at this potential technology, and for Netton we definitely said no, we want to do something that targets set by the EC, automate, robotize, and the robot is an obvious alternative to both the hyperbaric interventions with divers or this so-called atmospheric pressure exchange scheme of design. So we started from the very beginning, from scratch, redesigning the tools so that they can be handled by a robot, which I would describe as a single-handed, very awkward hand. Usually, the divers use both hands and sometimes four hands because they work as a crew of two. So we designed a specific mounting system for the drag bits and the same for the disc cutters. And we designed the robot from scratch. There was a potential idea of using off-the-shelf robots, but considering the weight of the items we have to handle, you end up with a absolutely huge robotic arm, very expensive and very difficult to position inside the TBM shield. So we decided to design a complete new robotic arm, specifically designed with only the degrees of freedom that we need for our application. We don't need so many degrees of freedom, and when you buy a standard robotic arm, you get it's meant to be extremely flexible, so it can absolutely do any type of movement. We don't need all this. So the design phase is finished. We've been through testing a number of actuators. It's all hydraulic, so very robust. It's finished in terms of the hydraulic circuit as well. We've already received the first set of hydraulic equipment. We have designed specific system to operate this locking mechanism, the mounting mechanism for both the drag bits and the disc cutters. And we have designed a test bench on which the whole system will be installed, so we can position both drag bits and disc cutters any place. The robot is also going to access the peripheral items. The robot will be ready at the end of this year. We are going to test it extensively next year. And what we are targeting is a TBM project in which we can fit our prototype. We are looking for opportunities with either the NetTun partners, the end users. We have three construction companies as end users, so three potential projects maybe from each of them. We have some preliminary discussions today, so we hope this will be finalized and we can test it in the field. That will be absolutely necessary to show to all potential clients the technology. We are definitely confident for a prototype and operate that, let's say, starting 2016.
Maybe we can finish it up with the Patton project. Maybe summarize it shortly, what it means.
Patton is about tunnel maintenance. Mm-hmm. It's a it was also a requirement from the EC to address maintenance or refurbishment of tunnels or putting old tunnels in up to new standards of safety or you know, there's been a lot of improvements in terms of regulations in tunnels. So there is a real need for a better maintenance and procedures for maintaining and upgrading tunnels. I knew the guy from SNCF who was, because he retired since, he was responsible for all the tunnels, tunnel department. SNCF is the French railway operator. They have a huge number of tunnels that were built close to one century ago. They've been repaired in a number of phases of repairs. They never repair a tunnel completely. They repair it by patches where it's degraded. They will do some repair works, and the rest of it is going to stay like this until it's required to maintain that part again. So after 80 years, let's say you have a patchwork in each tunnel, you have a pieces that have been repaired 10 years ago, others 20 years ago, and it's a whole story about how to keep that, say, patrimony of tunnels in a good state. Very difficult to decide based on the current situation, the cost, the need for train circulation, and one key question is, how is this tunnel going to degrade in the future? Is it going to degrade faster than another tunnel? Or is this degradation sort of stable and we can wait for another couple of years? They have monitoring systems, they have scanners that they use to detect any change of shape or any leakage of water or any loss of lining inside the tunnel. So they know the condition of each tunnel, but then they have to predict what's going to happen in the future and decide whether it's urgent or less urgent to repair this particular piece of tunnel, section of tunnel. I invited them to join NetTun because there was a request from the EC to address this question, and I knew they had some very significant experience. Discussing this with them, it became obvious that we needed some artificial intelligence to deal with the data. They have huge amount of data coming from their inspection teams and also from the construction data package, but The question is, how do you interpret all this? How do you correlate the current situation with the knowledge of the experts? So as the University of Leeds was involved in WP5 for ground prediction, I talked to them and they said, well, this is obviously part of our research fields, artificial intelligence. So there was a preliminary meeting with SNCF and Leeds, and they totally agreed on the type of research that we could conduct, and therefore we ended up setting up Work Package 10. What they are doing is they started interviewing the SNCF experts, understanding how they handle their work, how they use the data they have to predict what's going to happen next. And this is the basis of this work package. Then they analyzed the influencing factors. Well, they built, let's say, a grammar and vocabulary of tunnels. A tunnel is built in such a ground, and it is built with such a technique, and it is lined internally with bricks or stones or whatever. All these parameters have a potential impact on the behavior of the tunnel. Of course, the ground around it, presence of water. So they built a kind of knowledge base from which they can start with software. So first is build a knowledge base. This is called an ontology. And from this, they can implement decision-making software that takes these parameters, also influencing factors like presence of water, but if this water has a acid characteristics, it will have some impact on the speed of degradation, for instance. So it's exactly like human pathologies. You have symptoms of an illness. The doctor can only see the symptoms, or you can only see the symptoms. From these symptoms, you can understand what illness you have. This is exactly what they're doing, and this is why this work package is really fascinating. The ontology is dedicated to tunnels, or could be applied to what they eventually called linear structures like bridges or roads. They have similar types of characteristics.
This artificial intelligence, it's software, right?
It is a piece of software, yeah. In the end, yes.
And it will be used by maintenance crew operators.
The goal is to help the decision makers in making their decision about the strategy, as I was explaining, which tunnel do we need to handle in priority. So they need some facts and prediction numbers saying this is going to happen, and then they can make their own decision. Decision support tool is the exact term we named it. They need the summary of the situation and a prediction tool that will help them understand. So we have a first version of PAT-10. The next step is to implement this part. So how are these facts and influencing factors going to result in a faster or slower degradation? We are probably going to extend the duration of this work package. Was planned to finish before the end of NetTen. Now I think people are very happy and very optimistic about what's going to be produced in the end. So we are probably going to extend a little bit the duration of WP10 in order to complete the work during NetTen and have a product that could be used by other operators as well.
I was wondering how you would see the future, the involvement of robotics and artificial intelligence.
I think a number of actors would share a dream of having a crewless tunnel boring machine underground with the crew in offices at the surface. No one under the Earth's surface in risky areas difficult work. I think this is not so far from being feasible. Of course, there's a lot of work to be done, but it's not all pure science fiction. I think when you look at the space research or space technology today, or underwater, deep underwater technology, a lot of things are done without humans. Incredible things. So there's no real reason we should not be capable of doing this for tunneling.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your interest in our project.
You've been listening to a Tunnel Talk podcast.